Hello and welcome to the Velo News Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. I'm Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And with Velo News' own Andy Hood.
Hello, fellas. Here we are at the tour.
So we're going to be doing roughly a weekly podcast with Velo News, drawing in various staff members. I'm sure we'll have Neil Rogers at some point and Matt Bowden. Andy's got great knowledge not only of the American scene but also the Spanish scene, so we're hoping to pick his brains a little bit on, in particular, Alberto Contador and Alejandro Valverde and their chances at this year's tour. We've got little interviews with Greg LeMond picking his favourites, and also the American rider Danny Pate, who is riding his first Tour de France for Team Sky, his fourth in total, I think, but his first for Team Sky.
You're listening to the Velo News Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. You can find us on velonews.com and at Velo News on Twitter.
So let's start off talking about the American prospects at this year's tour. There's quite a lot of excitement, I think, about Andrew Talansky in particular. Also, TJ Van Garderen is the undisputed leader this year of BMC, having started last year with Cadel Evans kind of vying for that spot as well. He's going to be getting a lot of support from his team at this year's tour. Andy, what are your thoughts about Talansky's chances in particular? Obviously a great win at the Critérium du Dauphiné before the tour. And I think he, and Lionel, I know you think this as well, Lionel, that he's come into this tour with a real sense of optimism and possibility.
Your first observation is interesting, that this really is a generational change, a start of a new era for the Americans, really. Both TJ and Andrew are both leading their teams outright. And that really kind of sets it up for kind of generation 3.0 for American cycling. You know, we've had the Le Mans generation and the Armstrong years. And now this is really kind of the start of a new era for American cycling. We have two legitimate podium contenders leading two different teams, which is really a first in American cycling as well. There's a lot of excitement, not only about this year's tour, but just about what's going to be happening in the next couple of years. Both of these guys came through, well, TJ more than Talansky, came through the U23 program, which they built up over the last 10 years with that race house, which is now in Holland. And that's really kind of just helped feed a lot of new young talent into the elite peloton. And Talansky actually came through a different way, kind of, you know, just fought his way into the pro ranks, was kind of not really in with good graces with USA Cycling when he was a junior. And just through his own stubbornness and hard-headedness, he fought his way into the pro ranks, which I think tells a lot about his character. But both of these guys are set up to have a pretty good tour. I think podium might be a reach for both of them this year, but, you know, top fives possible. But like Talansky said yesterday, bike races aren't held on laps. Anything could happen, and he showed that at the Dauphiné.
Well, that's the really exciting thing. That's what's teed this tour up so nicely, that in a straight fight, he knows he cannot really contend with Froome and Contador, perhaps even Valverde as well. But that the way that Garmin have been approaching races this year and last year, with perhaps Charlie Wigelius deserves a lot of credit for this, coming up with a real kind of action plan, using very unusual, unconventional tactics, sort of old school tactics in a way. It creates all sorts of possibilities that wouldn't otherwise be there if the race just came down to the final mountain.
Yeah, I think that's what they have to try to do. And as you pointed out, Wigelius has been a key factor in that. I think one rider that's going to be missing this tour, especially for Talansky, is Ryder Hegedal. He's been key to kind of be the point man to help set up kind of these kind of raids or attacks that we've seen Garmin do. You know, Talansky or Hegedal did that for Daniel Martin last year at the Volta a Catalunya. You know, he was on the attack, helped pull Martin into the lead at that stage in the mountains in the Pyrenees, and that's what Ryder did in the Alps the other day in the Dauphiné. But Hegedal was Giro Welter program. I think the Garmin team is a little bit thin, I think, in terms of the depth of their squad. And I think that might kind of come back to bite them perhaps in the last part of this race, because they bring a pretty young, inexperienced team. You know, Miller's not on it. Garmin, I think, is always throwing a convention to the wind. You know, that's been kind of the trademark of their team since they were first created.
And they outwitted, outthought everybody on that last stage of the Dauphiné. And when you look at Talansky's kind of progression, he had a very solid but quite quiet Tour de France. He got in that break in the final week, didn't he? And sort of stole a few places overall and got himself into the top 10. I actually said on a previous podcast that he was 8th overall, but he was 10th overall last year. And prior to that, he almost won Paris-Nice, didn't he, but made a sort of quite a fundamental tactical error. But the one thing that strikes me about Garmin and about Jonathan Vaughters and Charlie Wagelius is that they are prepared to gamble. They're, you know, what very few teams really throw caution to the wind in quite the same way they do. So even hinting in the press conference that they've got some tactical kind of magic up their sleeves, they are likely to be one of the teams that will really ignite the race in quite an imaginative way, I hope.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, the team has always done things a little bit differently. And surprisingly enough, it actually works out in their favor quite a bit. I mean, I think no one expected them to win the Giro a couple years ago with Hesjedal. You know, Martin gets the Liège win. You know, they just pull these big wins out of their hats every once in a while. And it says a lot, I think, for their program, because it's not your kind of traditional old school, you know, build a team and run one clear captain. They always kind of throw a lot of darts at the dartboard and kind of see what sticks. This actually is kind of the first time Garmin actually has brought a team around one leader to the tour, especially. So we'll see how that plays out for him.
Do you think that's part of Jonathan Vaughters' kind of development of Andrew Talansky, is to put him in that position where he is the leader at 26 years of age and see how he copes with it?
Yeah, I think it's part of that. Like JV was saying yesterday, this is part of a multi-year program and approach to the tour. You know, put Talansky in that position, let him get the experience this year, being a leader, carrying the responsibility of the team, not so much pressure to really perform, whatever. You know, if they get a top 10, that's great. As they announced yesterday, Talansky's 2 more years with Garmin, so he's their man for the tour.
Tommy Altaslachter is also probably worth mentioning in the Garmin Sharp lineup. He is a bit of a wild card, I think, trying to bag stage wins. Should have a few opportunities, maybe even here in Yorkshire on stage two. But it is a team with quite an American accent, with Alex Howes and Ben King, and you know that team perhaps repositioning itself as more of an American team than the international setup it's been. Let's talk a little bit about TJ Van Garderen as well. He's had a sort of slightly erratic season, but seems to be coming into a bit of form coming to the tour. Last year he was hugely disappointed, of course. There was a lot expected of him at the tour last year, and he really fell apart in the Pyrenees and came good in the Alps. I remember he was almost won that stage at Alpe d'Huez, which Christophe Riblon won in the end. A thrilling finale when he kind of cracked within sight of the finish line and started pedalling through treacle. Very unfortunate, but obviously it's not about stage wins for him, it's about the overall. BMC always put out a strong team. What are you expecting from him at this tour?
Yeah, I think he said it best. If he can stay calm, stay out of trouble, and do his race going into the second half of the tour, I think this tour is quite a good course for him, having it the hard stuff at the end, back end of the race. Key for him is to get through this first half of the tour, for any tour contender, of course, but especially for TJ, who kind of has perhaps a little bit of a thinner skin, perhaps especially compared to Talansky. He needs to be protected by his team, you know, get through those cobbles, get through these first stages here at England. What's really in his favor is that final day time trial. I think if TJ can get into that through the Pyrenees within a shot of the podium, you know, I think he's going to surprise a lot of people if he can get into that final time trial within a shot of the podium, because I think that's going to really play to his favor. Guys like Froome, of course, can really count on that final time trial to make a big decisive factor on this race.
We've seen how aggressive Garmin Sharp can be in Talansky. You know, he's known as the pit bull, and when he had the chance of victory at the Dauphiné, he really went for it with real determination and aggression. Van Garderen, does he have that aggressive streak as well? Does he have that sort of mental toughness?
Yeah, I think he probably is. His racing style is a little more classic GC style. You know, save it all for the last climb. Perhaps a little more calculating. I mean, the general consensus is perhaps that TJ has the better motor engine of the two, and Talansky has perhaps the better head or heart. People compare actually Talansky to Armstrong.
And Eno, I've heard him compared to Eno as well.
Yeah, in terms of character. He's a very strong-willed character.
Just to be clear, that's comparing him to Armstrong in terms of character, yeah.
That's right. But with TJ, I think he struggled a little bit. He even admitted in an interview, you know, dealing with the pressure, the public pressure, the public expectations. I think he's become more mature over the last couple of years, grown into that role as being a leader within the team, but also being as a kind of a public figure. I know for a while there, he took off. He closed a Twitter account. He didn't like that negative feedback he was getting just from the random punters by, you know, criticizing him and stuff like that. I mean, no one does.
hey, we're all in the same boat there, TJ. Let's hear a little bit from one of the other Americans riding the tour, Danny Pate. Perhaps a surprise selection for Team Sky, but a welcome one, I think, as far as a lot of people are concerned. He's a very refreshing presence, very refreshing voice on the aforementioned Twitter as well. We look out for a few cryptic but pointed tweets from Danny Pate throughout the tour, well worth following. But here's Danny talking on Thursday evening's team's presentation in Leeds about the upcoming tour. So Danny, congratulations on your tour selection. Are you pleased to be here?
Oh yeah, I mean it's was my end goal all year, and you know, I'm really looking forward to it.
Was there any particular ride performance you did, or was it just been your sort of consistency this year that you think has earned you the place?
It's definitely the Dauphiné. I mean, I was pretty good all year, good enough to be on that team, and then I was really good there, and that helped me get and my spot on the team.
This is your first tour ride for Team Sky, isn't it?
First with Sky, yeah.
And you've obviously got a huge job to do the next few weeks, but what would it mean to you to be part of a team that's gunning for the yellow jersey?
I'd be amazing if we're able to win, you know, and it's something that I haven't been a part of. This will be my fourth tour, and I've been on teams where we won stages and had success, but not like that, you know. So it would be a big accomplishment.
And what's your specific job on the team?
If and when we get the lead, riding the front on the flats, and then trying to do as much I can on the climbing days also. And yeah, I mean, there's some of us that do work earlier than others, and I'll be one of the earlier guys.
You and Kirienka perhaps are doing a lot of the
grunt
work.
Me and Zabi will probably be first to ride, and then Kiri and Lopez or G, not sure which one. It'll just depend on some of the days.
And this is a good group of guys. You obviously know them pretty well now. Is that a happy camp?
Yeah, I think it's a great set of guys. It's the same set we rode in Dauphiné plus Bernie. Almost every guy on this team has been on the team for a while, other than Neve. And, you know, he's integrated really well. And he's been riding with Chris and Richie and all those guys all year long. So,
but three hard weeks ahead, are you looking forward to it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be easy, but once you kind of get into it, the reward is worth the risk, you know.
You're listening to the VeloNews Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.
This is your 18th tour, isn't it?
Yeah, 18th tour.
Coming of age tour for Andy Hood.
Yeah, it's hard to believe sometimes I'm still around. But my first tour was amazing, 1996, Reese beating Indurain.
A vintage tour.
It was a good one to start with, you know, just in terms of just all the everything that was so exaggerated in that era. And I was really green, you know, I really didn't. You know, it was just a newbie jumping into the wasp nest of what professional cycling was. And it's been interesting just to see how this sport has evolved and changed. You know, anybody that's been close to the sport, you know, have had so many ups and downs in so many different ways. But it does kind of has its eternal charm. You know, I'm personally a bigger fan of the Giro than the Tour de France, but the Tour, of course, is the measuring stick of professional cycling, and it's always what journalist said to me quite a few years ago, you know, you get that disillusioned with all the doping stories, and you realize that perhaps all these, you know, these guys were all just doped to the gills. And a colleague said to me, he goes, no, you can't look at it like that. You can't judge it on a personal level. You just look at it for what the stories that this sport gives, and the stories that come out of cycling, I mean, they're so good you just can't make them up. And it's a sport that just keeps giving and giving and giving.
It's a sport that keeps giving. So here we are in Leeds. We're looking ahead to the opening weekend at the moment. This should be going out, this podcast, just before. But we'll look ahead to the race as a whole rather than these 2 days. But we've spent a few days here now in Yorkshire. Andy, is it your first time in Yorkshire?
It is indeed.
What are your impressions?
Well, it was interesting. We were out last night and had dinner in downtown.
Downtown Leeds.
Yeah, it's exciting. We had a few pints. I have to say, compared to the reception this tour is getting, I've only been last night briefly downtown and basically just from the press room to my hotel. And I don't know, it's surprising me that I just don't get the sense that the that the whole community is terribly excited about this race. I mean, that's just my initial superficial impression compared to just comparing it to the Belfast Giro Partenza, which was absolutely spectacular. I've never seen a community get its arms around a bike race like Belfast did. Perhaps it's unfair to compare the two, but Belfast was absolutely stunning in terms of the whole community was behind it. Everything was literally bathed in pink. You could feel a real sense of excitement. And just here, I mean, well, I think the crowds would be huge, and we can judge after this weekend, but I was kind of surprised. I was expecting a little bit more.
Interesting, because I think I've had the opposite impression, but I think that buzz is perhaps more apparent outside of Leeds, which is quite a big city. Certainly, I spent a night in York, and York was taken over with tour fever, and I think the smaller villages and towns, certainly on the route, have really embraced it in a way that I think people will find quite impressive and quite staggering when the race gets underway. I'm quite surprised. What do you think that as well, Lionel? What are your thoughts in Leeds? Do you feel that Leeds has got it?
Yeah, I think it's in common with when the Tour visits a big city in France, Lyon or Bordeaux, and you kind of feel that the Tour is in one corner of the city. It's a bit like that here, whereas when it goes to the smaller towns, it does completely take over. And I think we get so trapped on our kind of almost like our red routes from hotel to press centre and where the race is taking part. But I'm sure when we get out into certainly Harrogate tomorrow, I think the finished town of the first stage will be it will be completely swamped by the Tour de France, because it's not a particularly large town. So that's probably the best place to judge it, I think. But I agree with you about Belfast. That was just stunning. But I think because it's a smaller city, the race had more of an impact.
And Leeds has probably had, you know, they've got a major football club here. They've got major events here, and perhaps there isn't the same. Belfast probably has fewer major events, I guess.
Soccer club.
Sorry, yeah. This is an American accented podcast. We should be doing American accents, shouldn't we? Really.
Let's not offend anyone.
No, let's not do that. Let's hear from an American legend, Greg LeMond, who Daniel Freeb and I sat down with the other day, and we tried the impossible with Greg LeMond. We tried to do a quick fire round of questioning, and anybody who's encountered Greg LeMond before, lovely guy that he is, will know that quick fire is not his strength. So we gave it a go, asking him for some of his tips and favourites for the Tour de France.
Who's going to win the Tour?
One word, Greg. One name.
Or two words.
Yeah, two words.
Chris Froome. I want to say Contador.
Who, Greg, will be the best placed American?
I don't want to pick riders, but I think Talansky.
Who do you think is the fastest sprinter, Cavendish or Kittel?
I like Cavendish better. I like him. I just like his personality. It's probably because my son Scott likes him.
Okay.
You know, I watch the sprint stages. It's exciting. But Kittel is obviously a young, very powerful sprinter. But I heard my wife told me a few, you know, something about Cavendish's crank was changed out last year. Left and right was different size, and that could affect the performance. But I actually think Cavendish, I always look at it when sometimes riders have a really good year. It's just a little, well, it's just a little bit off. Like when the world's in 83, I just was committed to doing a little more energy spent there, just a slightly off, and I wasn't as good in 84. And so when you're not that good in 84, or 84, let's say in a year, there's a little bit of effort really, you know, paying attention to your training, you're training more intensely. So Cavendish could be coming up into his own again. It'll be one of the more exciting parts of it, and seeing, you know, I got to imagine the pressure on Cavendish for Saturday is pretty surreal.
Any outsiders to watch? New names?
There's a lot of young riders that aren't here. I mean, I was hoping Quintana would be here. That would have been exciting. It all depends on if Contador. I just don't think there's a realistic challenge from anybody else at the overall GC.
Do you think it's harder in this modern era to win in consecutive years?
I always love that bit. It's harder now than it was yesterday. And I think of that when I turned pro, and like, it's harder now than I'm racing. But Eddie Merckx just ended like 4 years before. And really, imagine racing career lasts 14 years. So there is no period of harder or easier. It just is. So it is kind of whatever it is. It's whatever you're thrown. That's what athletes, you know, sports are like. It's whatever's given to you. So I don't think so. I think it's all a matter of the rider and the talent. It's the same psychological pressure. I don't know. It had to be just as hard to come back to back. It all depends on the rider, I think, no matter what year you're at.
And who, Greg, are you most looking forward to seeing, catching up with? Hino is always here, of course. Guimard is always here, working for RMC, the radio station.
I want to see Guimard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw him?
Well, we talked last year. He was on the radio, and I was trying to get to him. He was working on another truck, and I was trying to get to him, but I got pulled left and right and never got to see him. So I think my wife communicates with him on Twitter. Yeah, she communicates with everybody. I'm not on Twitter, so. But Guimard would be fun to talk to.
Thank you very much, Greg. We hope we'll catch up with you again during the tour.
Maybe for a game of golf, he said, the rest day. That won't involve you. Can carry my bag, right?
I brought my bike. I'm actually going to ride my bike here.
Yeah.
It's an electric bike. It's got a good motor.
Electric bike.
So this way I could do the whole stage in advance, you know, do it at 50, 60 Ks an hour.
You serious? Yeah.
No. No, I brought my bike. My bike.
Okay.
You're listening to the VeloNews Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. You can find us on VeloNews.com and at VeloNews on Twitter.
So that was Greg LeMond. This is the VeloNews Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. And we will be bringing you a weekly podcast throughout the Tour de France with a bit of an American flavor to it with the contributors from VeloNews. We're with Andy Hood today, and you heard there from Greg LeMond, who's a Eurosport ambassador at this tour, covering the whole tour for Eurosport. It will be, assuming he completes it, it'll be his first completed tour since he last finished it in 1992, when he was seventh. He did ride again in 94, but sadly retired, and that was pretty much him finished with the sport. It's actually really good to see him back and embraced by the sport.
I think it's great for American cycling that he is back into the sport. You know, there's all that acrimony between him and Armstrong, and he was obviously a lot of issues there that came up between LeMond during those years. He was very embittered with the sport. So to have him back and what he represents for American cycling, to have him embrace the tour and be back in the race, it's a huge impact, a huge significance for American cycling, because the sport is really, you know, having a renaissance again, kind of a rebirth, trying to find its way again after all the Armstrong scandal, which, you know, for the United States was probably one of the biggest sports scandals in American sports history. It was the fall of Armstrong. And the sport is still grappling with that, trying to come to terms with that, trying to move on. And by having LeMond here at the Tour is huge significance. You can't understate that.
To have him sort of reinstated in the public imagination as America's only Tour de France winner as well is symbolically huge. You know, he did take his reputation took a real battering during the Armstrong years because he spoke out against him, and clearly the Armstrong lobby was pretty powerful. I'll make a shameless plug here for the film of Slaying the Badger, which is my book, which is showing on ESPN during the Tour de France on the 22nd of July. That covers Le Mans' battle with Bernardino in the 1986 Tour de France, and LeMond obviously and Cathy feature very heavily in that film.
You're listening to the VeloNews Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.
Let's, in this final part, turn our attention to another specialism of yours, Andy, the Spanish cycling scene. You live in Spain, and you follow that scene very closely. Valverde, Alejandro Valverde and Alberto Contador are two of the favourites coming into this race. They've both returned to their... Do you think they've returned to their best form this season?
I would say, clearly, both are on excellent form going into this tour. Obviously, Contador is back at his best level that he's been in a couple of years. You know, he's been having that kind of sky-like spring, really, you know, where he goes to every race. He's either winning or second place in every stage race he started this season, which, much like Wiggins and Froome did in 2012 and 2013. So I've been curious to watch how, you know, Contador kind of needed that for his confidence and to kind of show that he was capable of, you know, kind of taking on Froome and raising his game from what was really a disappointing tour last year for Contador. It just got really shelled for the first time, you know, when he was racing the tour to win for the first time really in his career. And meanwhile, Valverde, I think, to me, is the total dark horse of this tour. I think Valverde could actually win the tour. You know, having the time trial late is going to help him because, you know, he just won the Spanish time trial championship last weekend. By having that final time trial last will help him because, you know, the idea is the final time trial decisive, the markings aren't as great, the differences won't be as great because people go into that more tired. And having the Pyrenees be really the decisive stages, which suit Valverde more than anybody really in the peloton. So I think it's going to be interesting to see the Spanish riders try to take on Froome, try to take on Sky, and see if they can beat him.
I thought Alberto Contador in the Tinkoff Saxo press conference had a sort of quiet confidence about him and was just deflecting all of the pressure onto Froome and saying, no, Froome's the favourite, Froome's the strongest, Froome's the best. And when we saw Sky yesterday, he was doing very much the same thing, but Froome didn't have that same aura. I think Richard made the point when we were talking yesterday that Froome seemed a lot more confident last year than he does this year. Contador almost has nothing to really lose, and he can go into the race and take the aggression to Sky in particular, and see how it pans out. There's no onus on him really to kind of make the running, which in a kind of odd way gives him that impetus to do so, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting observation because, as you well know, Sky likes to control the race, completely dominate until the final climb, and then let those guys turn on their SRMs and pedal, spin away to the top. And I think that people have tried to figure out how they can take on Sky. That means it has to be a very aggressive race. Reese, for better or for worse, a figure in the sport as well, whom I think has a pretty good mind for how to race. You know, last year, even when Contador wasn't at the same level of Froome, they took it to Froome every day. You know, they tried everything they could do because they knew they couldn't beat him on the final climb. So they tried to attack him in the flats, they tried to attack him on the descents, they tried to attack him every way they could. And eventually, Froome was the strongest man and carried the day. But stronger Contador, those same kind of tactics, like they can knock Sky off its little game plan. Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. But I've also heard, maybe you guys know this better than me, is that I've heard that Sky is going to almost, they've changed their game plan a little bit. They just want to kind of go out of the mountains just tied with Contador and then hope to beat him in the final time trial, trying to take the pressure off themselves a little bit to have to control the race so much. I don't know what buzz you're getting from those guys, though, on that.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think that after 2012, they controlled the race quite easily, and I think partly that was because they took a stranglehold on it early. Teams were then fearful of them. I think that fear has gone in the last couple of years, and I think Sky will try and avoid, as most teams do, having the responsibility for controlling the race for as long as possible. Especially this year, I think it's a very unpredictable race. We've seen how teams like Garmin Sharp can make it difficult to control by going off all over the place. But some of the stages are short and hilly, and they can be aggressive right from the start. And I mean, I think back to 2011 and the stage to Alpe d'Huez, which followed the previous day to the Col de Galibier, which won by Andy Schleck. The following day, Alberto Contador, who was really almost out of it by then, it was a very short stage, very, very, it was like 87 miles or something. He went back up the Galibier, finished up Alpe d'Huez. Contador was aggressive right from the start, and it really blew the race to smithereens. He ultimately didn't get the reward that he perhaps deserved that day. I don't think the form was there. Pierre Roland won the stage. But ever since then, it's kind of established a blueprint for these short stages, and there are a few this year, including one in particular in the Pyrenees, which I think could be decisive.
It's not just the short stages, it's the nature of the stage. I think Christian Prudhomme over the last number of years has created a race that favours bike racers, people who really want to take the upper hand and take the race to the opposition. And if you look at that first phase of the race up to the first rest day, and Charlie Wegelius of Garmin Sharp made the point that there's plenty of opportunities in those stages. There's the first Sunday stage in the Yorkshire Hills is a bit like a Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Then you've got a stage that's like a Paris-Roubaix light. So you look at Contador, you look at Valverde, they're going to be strong on, particularly on Sunday, and probably won't have too much to fear on the cobbles because they've got good teams behind them that will be able to cope with that. And then into the Vosges mountains, which, they're not as glamorous and as dramatic as the Alps and the Pyrenees, but I think there's a lot of danger lurks there, particularly the opportunity for some kind of ambush, a bit like we saw Valverde have terrible luck on the crosswind stage last year, and that cost him a place in the top five probably. Anything could happen on those kind of days, so it's going to be one of those great tours where we're all driving to the finish and then you get to the press room to find out what's kind of been going on, and waiting for the TV coverage to start, and you realise that the race is really happening when you kind of least expect it.
Yeah, I think it's by having the time trial on the penultimate day sets up for a great tour, because you know, as you said, in 2012, you know, this big long time trials, guys, Froome, Wiggins, they just take the yellow jersey, and then it's a fight for the podium. So I think this year's tour, as you said, is set up for a real exciting race.
Shall we leave it there for our first Velo News cycling podcast? You can obviously find Velo News at velonews.com and at Velo News on Twitter. You can find us as well at cycling_podcast and thecyclingpodcast.com. We podcast every day with the Telegraph cycling podcast, supported by Jaguar. And as I say, we'll be here every week with Velo News doing a special, usually American flavored podcast. So thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Enjoy your 18th tour.
Thank you very much.
We'll give you a birthday cake at some point.
It'll be a good one.
Lionel, thank you.
Thank you, Richard.